You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, very happy to be with you for the next 1 hour. We'll have a DNR guest a little bit later talking about some fairly upbeat rough grouse counts this year. Nice to see rough grouse bouncing back. You know, tough winters are actually good for grouse, and we'll talk to Charlotte Roy from the DNR about that. We'll also have Tim Lesmeister, but I'm going to kick it off with Tim Spielman, editor here at Minnesota Outdoor News. Tim, welcome. Off we go with another week, and I see Wisconsin sticking it to Minnesota non-residents, huh, with their fee increases over there.
Yeah, well, you know, like they said in their press release, haven't been increased since 05. That's a long time ago.
It is, yeah, 18 years, yeah.
You know, I don't know offhand the non-resident fees, but $200 for a deer license, and I'm guessing that's firearms or gun license over there, because they have a separate archery and crossbow for $165. And I was thinking that's what they were, so maybe it's a modest increase. Another one that some folks probably be interested in is the $55 annual fishing license. And again, I wish I had it in front of me. I don't know how that compares to Minnesota, but I'm guessing it's within $5-$10.
So, yeah, the only thing that jumped out at me is the fact that they did not increase it for residents. The last time they'd increased it for both, I guess, like you say, was in 05, but just going after the non-residents, which is really the way of the world. That's what all these different states are doing. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy I follow on one of the social media platforms, Tim, who's kind of funny. He talks about what's going on out there with hunting and fishing, and he points out that, you know, all we talk about is how, you know, the number of hunters and anglers is decreasing, and yet, you know, some of these states are absolutely overloaded, especially out west, right, for some of their, you know, the elk permit applications, things of that nature.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the demand is there, I guess you get what you can get, and if you're the only game in town, I mean, there are a lot of western states for elk, for example, but the people that go there, the people I know who do it and try to do it as often as they're permitted to, pretty hardcore about it. I mean, they complain about the price. They complain about putting all the money in to get the points and all that, but when all's said and done, they go.
You better believe it. You better believe it. Tim, a number of good front page stories today. We probably should talk about the top one. The DNR late last week announcing that they intend to ban the use of lead ammunition on, is it 56 state scientific and natural areas around Minnesota? Tori McCormick had a good story about this. Federal Cartridge then weighing in on Tuesday. We got a letter from them that they sent to the DNR objecting to the change. We printed it in our commentary slot this week. I'll let you talk. What's your initial take on this?
Well, honestly, one question I had that hasn't really been answered is, okay, so there's 56 SNAs where hunting is allowed, where lead ammo can't be used any longer. And there are, what, 100 and, God, what did Tori say? I'd have to look here. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of SNAs in the state. Right. And I guess I never thought of them as big hunting magnets. I mean, I understand that hunting is good on some of them. I remember sitting in at a roundtable discussion about SNAs, and, you know, they're all about native flora mostly, I guess, in a lot of ways. But I remember then one of the problems was we've got all these deer on this SNA, and they're killing these precious native plants that we're trying to protect in the first place. So I realize that hunting is part of SNAs in a lot of places. I don't know what the extent is, but the fact that federal weighed in as critically as that company did, and they mentioned thousands of people being affected. I didn't realize it was that high. I'm sure somewhere out there there's a number that would tell us how many people hunt on these 56 scientific and natural areas. I don't know what that is, but it might be the principle of the thing too. I think that was one of the big issues that Federal alluded to, is that it was a process that was signed by commissioner's order. There wasn't the legislature didn't have any weigh in on it, for good or for bad, and that there wasn't input taken by the DNR, according to Federal. So a lot of issues there, and I think they probably look at it as a chipping away, maybe, at a problem that they don't believe exists.
Great points, Tim. The transparency thing, definitely a little concerning. I alluded to that on a whole other issue in my column this week. Yeah, I think maybe part of where Federal is coming from is we've got a group that advocated for this Friends of the SNAs or whatever they're called, that Tory's story makes very clear. These guys want to ban lead statewide. So, you can kind of see where Federal's coming from, that they would be overtly critical or there would be, some whiplash on this. In terms of the pure policy, I mean, some of these SNAs, they're not something you and I or a lot of people think about very much. Right. Some of them are, you probably shouldn't have people scattering lead shot across some of these SNAs. I think some of them are like bogs, right, or fens where the water chemistry is really important. And, I could see the DNR in some places saying, we really don't want to be scattering lead here. But then, there's others where is this really a big deal, especially in places where you're trying to clean out some deer. I mean, if there's a few chunks of lead shot laying around after some deer hunters go out, is that offset the good that these deer hunters are doing, peeling deer off the landscape? So, I've got some mixed views on this also. Federal calling for a meeting with the governor and with the DNR on this. I guess we will see how it plays out. Any other thoughts, Tim?
No, but I too look forward to this possible meeting.
Yeah.
It might give a little more insight into what the DNR is thinking beyond SNAs.
Mm-hmm.
As it's always something, there's always something brewing when it comes to non-lead ammo and tackle.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Spielman kicking off this week's show. Tim, you had a news story on the front also this week about winter kill. I was talking to a lake detective about that last Sunday a little bit, Tim. He actually thought it wasn't a horrible year. He thought we had some runoff into the lakes late in the year that maybe helped stave off really severe winter kill. But you had some sources saying it did have some impacts.
Well, it's like winter kill in lakes usually is. It's pretty confined to the south, but the far south in some cases. Although I did talk to, DNR fisheries folks in Windham and in Ortonville. And I also mentioned it to someone from Hutchinson, and he told me that it wasn't too bad there. So I focused mainly on where it hit hardest, and that was on the southwestern part of the state and then the western side over by Ortonville as well. And both the people I talked to in those areas said it was as significant as it has been in their DNR careers, and both of them have been around for 2.5, going on 3 decades now. So it's been a while. I mean, I remember a couple of winters where it was particularly bad, and I think you usually see it when there's a late ice out, but this was coupled by early snow early. So basically what you're dealing with is sun not getting down into the oxygen is the dissolved oxygen disappears faster in the longer that's the situation, then the more fish that die. But they do some stocking. They put adult brood stock in. And as most people know, when you've got a fish die off and you put some brood stock in, the fish that are produced are going to do quite well because there's not other fish eating them. And there's plenty of forage for the few mouths that are left. So it's a good thing. I also made sure to mention, and I have done this in the past too, but DNR rearing ponds, a lot of them are up in that Ortonville area. And if you have winter kill, there's just not much of anything left in those rearing ponds, which is exactly what you want to see when you put the little walleye fry in and you hope they have a good production. Right. And it sounds like, at least right now, that is indeed the case.
Funny how, depending on the story we're writing, winter kill is a good or a bad thing.
Well, it's also a natural thing, too. I always defer to what's natural whenever I can, whether something's good or bad. It's like wildfires. They're natural, and so is winter kill.
Tim, final thought. We just have a moment left here, but I like the mixed bag item. DNR looking for volunteers for the state fair, pointing out they need someone to walk around with Smokey Bear because the who's ever actually in the Smokey Bear suit is not allowed to speak.
by federal rules, no less. So when I first read that, I just sort of imagined Smokey Bear at the state fair hanging around with these little kids, and all of a sudden Smokey speaks and these kids scream and run to their parents, and Smokey gets punched in the face or something.
What happens to the guy in the Smokey suit if he does speak? He's violating federal law. He gets hauled to Leavenworth or something?
I don't know. But it's sort of, as we talk about, it's kind of an inglorious job. You can't talk.
Right.
And you're dressed in a hot Smokey Bear suit at the end of August. Yeah. I mean, how do you even tell someone that you're thirsty?
Yeah. I bet they get paid real well, too. Right. All right. Well, Tim, we'll watch for that at this summer state fair, which isn't too far out. Thanks for spending a segment with me, and have a good week ahead.
Yep. Thanks. You too, Rob.
Right, Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. Let's break. We'll check in with the DNR, talk rough grouse when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
You wanted lower prices? Fleet Farm's got them. Like KT Nut and Fruit Blend, now only $32.99 for a 20-pound bag. Or how about $3.49 a quart for Resolute Conventional or Synthetic Blend Motor Oil? Also, Resolute Classic Green Antifreeze is now just $10.99 a gallon. And control summer weeds with Gordon's Amine 240 Weed Killer. 2.5 gallons, now only $69.99. Look for new lower prices on everything you need for everyday life with price drops at Fleet Farm.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Nice Chevy Trailblazer, Ben.
Thanks. It was love at first sight.
But didn't you say you loved all the room in the Traverse?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't you say you loved the style of the Blazer?
No doubt.
And all the tech in the Equinox?
Definitely.
But the Trailblazer was love at first sight?
Well, I didn't say it was the only one I loved at first sight.
The hardest part of driving home in a new Chevy SUV is choosing which one. Click now to learn more. Find new roads at your local Chevy dealer.
Introducing the all-new OutdoorNews.com, the most trusted source for all things out of doors in the Great Lakes region, just got better. At OutdoorNews.com, you'll now have full access to every outdoor news story, breaking news and updates, our comprehensive fishing and hunting reports, pro tips, and much more for our seven-state region and beyond. Top hunters and anglers look to Outdoor News to keep them up to date and ahead of the crowd. Now it's easier than ever with the all-new OutdoorNews.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is the voice for your public lands, waters, and wildlife. From the Canadian Yukon to the Florida Everglades, we're stepping up to conserve North America's public lands, defend our hunting and fishing traditions, and expand public access to the outdoors. Our outdoor heritage depends on sportsmen and women like you speaking up for the natural resources that sustain our way of life. Find out how you can get involved at backcountryhunters.org and become a BHA member today.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with you for another segment. We will have Tim Lesmeister with us in about a half an hour. If you like what we chat about here, check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can read the print edition by subscribing at that website, or you can also give us a call at 800-535-5191. We also have a great new digital edition, all the same content available on the website digitally. You can subscribe also at OutdoorNews.com. I want to chat now with a member of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Pretty upbeat press release came from Charlotte Roy. She's the DNR's grouse project leader based out of Grand Rapids. And Charlotte, welcome. Good to have you here. And tell us, rough grouse numbers looking pretty decent this year, huh?
Yes, they're looking very decent. They remain high after last year. So I'm happy to be here and happy to share good news.
Well, rough grouse numbers, we talk a lot about this. They kind of run on a 10-year cycle. Now, I believe the highs and peaks and valleys of that cycle have moderated a little bit over the past 20, 30, 40 years, but we still see that. What influences that cycle? Do we know?
Well, we have some recent work that's come out of Wisconsin in which they reported that climate is having a big influence on those 10-year cycles of various species. Grouse are one of the species that follow 10-year cycles. Snowshoe hares also do. And so there's some climate component of that. And then there's a lot of other things that people have examined that haven't received as much support. So right now, we're thinking that we may be experiencing some changes in the future related to climate change. I think it's too early based on the data that we have right now to be able to say anything along those lines. But certainly there's the idea out there that we can expect that in the future.
Charlotte, historically, I mean, do we think that this cycle has existed, pre some of our climate change concerns? And historically, was it tied more to predation or is that just unclear?
People have looked at predation. Other researchers have looked at predation as having a role in the cycles. And there was some weak support for that, but it wasn't very strong. There's stronger support for the role of climate in those cycles. If you look at grouse in the north and in the southern parts of their range, grouse only cycle in the northern part of their range.
Interesting. Yeah, because we do have grouse like in southeastern Minnesota. We don't see much of a cycle. Is that what you mean by southern part? Or are you talking even farther south?
Oh, well, I was talking even farther south, mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right that in the southern part of Minnesota, we don't see that cycling occurring.
Interesting.
So there is some climate component to the 10-year cycle. And it is not exactly a 10-year cycle. It's, it varies from 8 to 11 years.
Well, and that kind of ties into what we're seeing now. The release that the DNR issued this week talks about basically a low point. Was it as recently as 2 years ago? And now we're seeing a maybe not a peak, but a grouse population in Minnesota that's increasing.
Certainly remains high and comparable to last year in the core of the rough grouse range. There were a couple of regions where we did see declines from last year, most notably in the northwest and in the southeast part of the state. So the strong pattern that we observed this year is being driven largely by the northeast or the core of rough grouse range. But you're absolutely right. That low in 2021 that we experienced was not quite as low as it's been in previous cycles. And so I was a little surprised last year when I saw the counts go up because I was thinking that we were on our way down and they went up instead. And so that either, it could mean that the low just wasn't as low as it has been in the past, or I'm not quite sure. We'll just have to wait and see what we see in future years and see what the population's doing.
We've had some good habitat conditions, it sounds like, the past couple of years that's contributed to this spike, right? I mean, we've had a couple reasonably tough winters in the north, and that maybe is counterintuitive to some folks out there listening, but good snow depths, that's a good thing for rough grouse, isn't it?
Absolutely. When we have good snow depths and we don't have a lot of freezing and thawing that results in that snow crust on the surface, then the rough grouse can dive under the snow and roost under the snow, and they benefit from thermal regulatory savings down below the snow. It's much warmer inside the snow. It's more insulated than out in the ambient conditions. And it also helps reduce the risk of predators, because grouse are a dark bird on a white surface. So if they're below the surface of the snow, they're less visible to predators.
Yeah, unlike ptarmigan or snowshoe hares, they don't change their plumage, do they, during the winter?
They do not.
They stay dark. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Charlotte Roy. She's with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and Charlotte is the grouse project leader with some good news. Looking like rough grouse populations are in solid shape, maybe even very good shape, going into this fall's hunting seasons. Charlotte, for folks out there listening, how do you go about counting a bird that lives out in the woods? How do we get an estimate of grouse populations here in Minnesota?
good question. We have lots of cooperating organizations that help us with this. And I just want to take a second to acknowledge some of them because we appreciate their help so much. 1854 Treaty Authority, several National Wildlife Refuges, several counties, the Chippewa National Forest, the Superior National Forest, just to name a few. Observers go out and they count the number of drums at various listening stops. The stops are 1 mile apart and there are 10 stops per route. They go out in the spring during the peak of rough grouse drumming in their area and they count the number of drums. And this gives us an index to the breeding population because the males display very rigorously in the spring to signal their territories to other males and also to attract females.
And for folks listening, what are we talking about drumming? I understand what that means. A lot of these big birds, whether they're turkeys, whether they're prairie chickens, whether they're sage grouse, whether they're rough grouse, they have pretty ornate displays, don't they, in the spring when they're during their breeding season?
Absolutely. And they're pretty fascinating to watch. The rough grouse drumming display is when the rough grouse, he gets up on a drumming log or another elevated site like a rock and will flap his wings in rapid succession. And the movement of the air over his wings creates this low frequency drumming sound. It almost sounds a little bit like your heart in the back of your neck.
Yeah, it's very distinctive. And once you've heard it, it's something you'll never forget. It's just that thump, 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 and it accelerates. I've been lucky enough to witness it up close. And they kind of like trap air, don't they, with their wings and create that that thumping sound.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, Charlotte, and maybe you know the answer to this. It would seem like they'd be very exposed to predators when they're sitting on this drumming log making all this noise. Is that a frequency that predator birds, goshawks, whatever else can't hear? How do they get away with that?
They do that by selecting habitat that's open so they can see those predators from a distance. So you'll notice when you look at areas with drumming logs that are being used by rough grouse that they have very good visibility in the area so that they can detect those predators that can hear them. And so they choose habitats that allow them to detect predators early.
Charlotte, we've heard a lot about West Nile virus affecting, outdoor news. We have publications in eastern states. I think it's been a fairly big issue out there, this West Nile virus affecting populations of all sorts of birds, including rough grouse. Is that an issue here in the upper Midwest, and has that influenced grouse populations?
I'm glad you ask. We just finished doing a study on that in which many of our hunters here in Minnesota submitted samples to help us and to which we're very grateful. And we did, in fact, detect West Nile virus in our rough grouse here in Minnesota. About 12% of our birds harvested in the fall and submitted for sampling tested positive for having been exposed to West Nile virus. They were not currently sick with West Nile virus in the fall, but they had to have been exposed and successfully overcome an infection. And so obviously they are being exposed. Unfortunately, because, our sampling occurred in the fall, we're unable to account for any birds that may have been exposed in the summer and did not survive. So those birds are not available to sample in the fall. So we still don't have a good sense of that piece, how many birds are dying over the summer from West Nile virus. But we certainly know that some of the birds are surviving to the fall to be sampled. And so we recommended in that study that we did and we published, we recommended that to provide the most protection against West Nile virus, we need to focus on providing habitats that help the birds be in the best condition so that they can overcome these challenges, much like a person, that is having a good environment and not completely stressed out is going to overcome little challenges to its immune system and be able to survive those.
Any plans for any follow-up studies, Charlotte, on West Nile affecting rough grouse or other birds here in Minnesota, or do you feel like you've done a pretty thorough job?
Not at the moment. The tricky part is that, you know, to try to get at that summer piece is really hard because if you, you know, mark birds and they die from West Nile virus, they're often scavenged by predators pretty quickly. Sure. So it's a really difficult piece to get at in the wild. In a captive situation, you can do things, but captive situations don't always mimic the wild. So at the time, with the current, you know, technology that we have available and the tools that we have available, we think that, you know, trying to get at that summer piece would be too big a challenge to do successfully right now. But hopefully, you know, in time, there will be options that become available.
Well, Charlotte, it sounds like listeners can view the complete rough grouse survey report on the DNR website, mndnr.gov/wildlife/grouse. So folks can go there and read, you know, this latest report, pastures reports, all the information they possibly want about rough grouse in Minnesota, I think is right there.
We try.
Well, Charlotte, thanks a lot for joining us. Thanks for the good news, the good report. Should be some good rough grouse hunting for hunters here in Minnesota this fall, huh?
Always a pleasure to share good news, but I do want to caveat that the rough grouse drumming survey is not predictive of the fall forecast.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that caveat there, Charlotte. All right. Well, thanks for joining us and have a great week ahead. A good fall too.
You too, Rob. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, that's Charlotte Roy. She's the DNR's Grouse Project Leader. She's based out of Grand Rapids. Stick around. More of the broadcast after these messages.
It's walleye season, and at Sportsman's Lodge on the Lake of the Woods, we're ready to put you on fish. We have the boats, the gear, and the guides to give any angler a world-class fishing experience. Plus, our newly renovated dock system provides easy, convenient access. 49 new slips have power hookups to keep your boat charged and in the water, so you can get after the fish quickly. Book your adventure today at sportsmanslodges.com or give us a call at 800-862-8602.
Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 42nd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous Duck and Goose Calling Contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 11th, 12th, and 13th, and August 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
You wanted lower prices? Fleet Farm's got them. Like KT Nut and Fruit Blend, now only $32.99 for a 20-pound bag. Or how about $3.49 a quart for Resolute Conventional or Synthetic Blend Motor Oil? Also, Resolute Classic Green Antifreeze is now just $10.99 a gallon. And control summer weeds with Gordon's Amine 240 Weed Killer. 2.5 gallons, now only $69.99. Look for new lower prices on everything you need for everyday life with price drops at Fleet Farm.
The Kenai Peninsula is Alaska's playground. It's where you'll find some of the best fishing on the planet. Jason's Guide Service guides on the Kenai River, and this is where you should take your quest for that trophy rainbow trout. You can also get into some of the best sockeye salmon fishing in the world. If you want to take home some fresh wild salmon, there's no better place to do it than on the Kenai River. Check it out at jasonsguideservice.com.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Driesline with you for another segment. Our friend Tim Lesmeister will be with us in about 15 minutes. Thank you, Charlotte Roy from the Minnesota DNR, who joined us for the last segment. We talked rough grouse, not hunting so much, but the outlook for the grouse population, at least coming out of the spring drumming counts season. If you like what we chat about here, check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can read all of our content on the website, or you can subscribe to the print version. Again, 800-535-5191 to subscribe, or that website, outdoornews.com. Hey, I want to talk some midsummer muskie fishing with an old friend of mine, a longtime contributor to Outdoor News, Mr. Rob Kim. He's a multi-species angler, multi-hunting kind of guy, too. Rob, how are you doing this summer? How's the summer treating you?
So far, so good. It's been a pretty enjoyable summer. It kind of, for a while there, it didn't seem like we were ever going to get to summer. It was just going to stay winter right up until fall, but we got summer in a hurry, and it's been good ever since.
Good. Yeah, talking a little off-air with you here, Rob, you're like me, someone who's not afraid to offer an opinion now and then, and we spend a lot of time bashing the legislature around here, and certainly there were some decisions that came out of the legislature I didn't like. There were a lot that I did like, but I know you've got some quick thoughts on that, too. What'd you make of the 2023 legislative session here in Minnesota?
Boy, there was a lot there, and I think that's, you know, whether you like individual policies that came out of that legislative session or not, the fact that they got things through the session, they got things through the process. I thought Rick Hansen did a great job of driving a lot of that stuff. There were a lot of things in there that hunters and anglers have been waiting for a long time. The catfish guys, they finally got two lines on the Mississippi, for example.
Yeah.
The fact that just they got some things done, there was some funding things for infrastructure things for the DNR with some of their hatcheries and stuff like that has been lingering out there waiting to get addressed for years. And there have been some sessions in the past where we didn't even get a natural resources bill through the legislature.
Sure.
And, you know, in state of Minnesota, where hunting and fishing and our natural resources are important as they are, not just, as hunters and fishermen, but just kind of what we are as a state, you know, what we're about. That was a shame. And so it was nice to see some headway made. It's not perfect. Nothing that comes through the legislature ever is, but boy, there was a lot to like in it overall.
Just about every year after the session, I write a column lamenting how nothing got done. I could not do that this year, because to your point, a whole lot of things came down the pipeline. Hey, let's talk fishing a little bit with you here. Now, you said you haven't really been out muskie fishing yet, although you had a rock bass that, on the end of your line that tanked.
Yeah,
with the
just
muskie.
This last weekend, I was, just fishing, honestly, fishing crappies, getting a few crappies for dinner. And poor little rock bass just got drilled by a muskie. bringing the rock bass in and, saw the big brown and gold flash. And I was like, oh, I know what that is. And had him on for a little bit. And I felt bad. It's tough enough being a rock bass as it is. And then you get eaten by a muskie besides, got a hook in his mouth and oh no, it can't get any worse. Then he gets drilled by a muskie. Poor little guy.
Yeah, it's a fish eat fish world out there. It seems like you tend to focus on fishing just based on what I've heard you talk about over the years. You're maybe more of a mid season to fall to even, cold weather musky angler. Is that kind of your prime time?
Yeah, and early season's great. The problem with early season musky fishing is, early season musky fishing can be good. That same time of year is really good for other stuff. It's walleye fishing's really good. Mm-hmm. Bass fishing, I love bass fishing. That's great early in the season. So you can't do it all at once, plus trout fishing besides. So I tend to start in on the muskies, toward the last half of the season, mid-July into August, and then right up, I'll fish muskies until lures start bouncing off the ice in the fall. I'll go right to the bitter end, so.
The season closes December 1, correct? It used to go late. It used to be open in December. I think in my early days here in Outdoor News, I got a story from you and Jack Burns going out on Mille Lacs after the 1st of December, one of those years when we had
when it just happened to be open.
Exactly. But it does shut down on December 1 now, right?
Yep. And that was done primarily to kind of protect specifically some of the metro fisheries and some of the metro tiger lakes from ice fishing pressure. Lots of muskies were getting inadvertently harvested. And there are still some muskie guys who are pretty salty about, you know, closing it on December 1st. the river stays open and some of the lakes stay open and they really don't like having to quit. But most years, it's kind of a non-issue.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline talking with another Rob. Rob Kim a little bit about muskie fishing. I want to talk, you know, maybe some tactics with you, but while we still have time, I want to bring up this live sonar thing. The Star Tribune had a long story on it. I wrote a long story on it. I don't know if it's on your radar, so to speak. What do you make of, the forward-facing sonar? Is it a fishing game changer? I guess has been the term people have been throwing around lately.
I think it absolutely is. And I'm still very much on the fence as to what that change means, is it good or bad? I know of a guide, he's a muskie guide, and his primary tactic right now is to cruise around looking at live sonar until he spots a fish. And the number that he shared, his guide clients now, for a full guide trip, and he keeps really rigid, really detailed statistics. His guide clients are making, on the average, between 18 and 23 casts in a trip.
Wow.
I would make that in 10 minutes.
Right.
I don't have the live sonar. I don't plan to, I don't plan to get it anytime soon. And it's tough for me to talk about without coming off like a curmudgeon.
Sure. You know?
I don't want to tell anybody else how to have fun. If that's what makes fishing fun and engaging for them, great. To me, I think fishing that way, having that technology, it's giving up something in the fishing experience that I don't want to give up on. I don't want to give it away. And that's that kind of that anticipation and the unknown. And that's just the surprise of the encounter. That's a big part of muskie fishing for me. And I'm not willing to give that up. I also do think we have to acknowledge what that technology can do for our fishery and to our fishery. Because, we have our muskies now, they don't get a break.
Right.
Used to be night fishing was kind of an unusual thing. Now everybody does it. They get round the clock pressure from the day the season opens till the day the season closes. And there is a price to be paid for that, the fishery.
Right. I mean, it used to be called the fish of 10,000 casts. It's now, to your point, the fish of 15 to 20 casts. What does that added pressure mean? We get a lot of reel shots sent to us, Rob. And over the years, we've gotten a few musky shots. I'm seeing a lot more from people that I don't look like seasoned, grizzled musky anglers. And there are people out there, I'm sure, who are employing this technology. And we keep asking, what does this added pressure mean for our fisheries? I think case study number one, ground zero, might be the muskellunge.
Yeah, I think so too. And because it is such a low incidence fish to begin with, it is, it's still and always an extraordinarily vulnerable resource. Right? Mm-hmm. It just is. And like I said, and I have had some pretty long conversations with friends of mine. Some of them have this technology and love it and enjoy it. And they argue that it's no different than a depth finder. Right. It's just a different kind of depth finder. I have others that are more skeptical about it, saying, we maybe need to step back and acknowledge that it's a fundamental change in the way we interact with the resource.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't acknowledge that reality, we're going to pay the price for that eventually. And maybe maybe it goes to I'm speculating, do we get to the point someday where we have hoot owl rules like they do on trout streams out west, where there's a time where you just don't fish, so the fish get a break.
Right.
I don't know.
I tell you what,
I'm going to get hate mail for that comment, by the way. I'm going to get absolutely crucified for suggesting that. But there, I said it.
Yeah. Well, we might be there. Rob, we're almost out of time. We haven't even talked about the fun stuff, just going out fishing. Here we are mid-July, looking ahead. What do you think are going to be some good lakes, some good locations for muskie fishing as we get into the back half of summer?
So everything that I'm, hearing from the people that have, and I've seen this with other species too, and they're all in the same water. A lot of the fish species right now, they're in summer peak or just getting past it. They're kind of settling into those summer routines and they get pretty predictable. It's a fun time to fish because when you get the right weather conditions and you get good conditions, the fish are going to be there. They're going to be moving around. So it's I tend to be a fish fast cover water kind of guy anyways, but this is a, you know, this is a really good time to, you know, put on fast moving bucktails, or you know, if you like to troll, cover some water. Top waters can be great as well. This is getting to be, you know, kind of one of my favorite times of year to fish. It's, you know, main lake structure, flats and weed lines kinds of stuff. Fish will start moving into the rocks, you know, on some of those Canadian shield type lakes. It's times now. It's good stuff.
Excellent. Well, Rob, thanks for spending a segment with me here. We covered a lot of ground, a lot of water, I guess I should say. I appreciate you calling in, and I encourage folks to watch for Rob's byline in maybe an upcoming edition of Outdoor News. Thanks, and have a good rest of your summer, Rob.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Yep, Rob Kim. Let's get in a break. Tim Lesmeister will be with me when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
You wanted lower prices? Fleet Farm's got them. Like KT Nut and Fruit Blend, now only $32.99 for a 20-pound bag. Or how about $3.49 a quart for Resolute Conventional or Synthetic Blend Motor Oil? Also, Resolute Classic Green Antifreeze is now just $10.99 a gallon. And control summer weeds with Gordon's Amine 240 Weed Killer. 2.5 gallons, now only $69.99. Look for new lower prices on everything you need for everyday life with price drops at Fleet Farm.
Your land is your legacy. But keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Michigan, Wisconsin, or Minnesota, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Minnesota's largest outdoor event returns for its 42nd year, Game Fair. Check out dozens of hunting, fishing, and dog training seminars. Visitors can see more than 300 exhibitors, plus enjoy games for dogs and youth. Test the latest equipment and enjoy the world-famous Duck and Goose Calling Contest. Game Fair runs 2 weekends, rain or shine, August 11th, 12th, and 13th, and August 18th, 19th, and 20th. At the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey. See details at gamefair.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Introducing the all-new OutdoorNews.com, the most trusted source for all things out of doors in the Great Lakes region, just got better. At OutdoorNews.com, you'll now have full access to every outdoor news story, breaking news and updates, our comprehensive fishing and hunting reports, pro tips, and much more for our seven-state region and beyond. Top hunters and anglers look to Outdoor News to keep them up to date and ahead of the crowd. Now it's easier than ever with the all-new OutdoorNews.com.
Great weather means it's time for kids to go out and play. But kids aren't the only ones outdoors. Ticks that spread Lyme disease and other infections are also active in the spring and summer. CDC reminds you and your children to wear insect repellent, bathe or shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check for ticks daily. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Welcome back, everybody. Final segment of this week's broadcast of Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerison. Tim Lesmeister helping me wrap it up. Read Tim in Outdoor News. Give us a call at 800-535-5191 to subscribe or check us out online at OutdoorNews.com. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions there. Welcome, Tim. It's very nice to see you. And I see the DNR issuing a press release, the Camp Ripley Archery Hunt. If you want to participate in that this fall, you need to apply by Friday, August 18th.
Do you remember for years it seemed like there were massive numbers of photographs in the outdoor news of Camp Ripley bucks? It seemed like every year there were at least a dozen monster Ripley bucks coming up off that hunt, and the photos would always find their way into the outdoor news. Mm-hmm. There's not as many these days, and that is because there's fewer huge trophy deer taken on these Ripley hunts. It's still a popular hunt, and they still get a fairly decent amount of, archers that are applying for that tag, but it seems to me that they've knocked down the population of those massive trophy bucks, and it's not the same hunt as it was 15 years ago.
Yeah, it used to be two-day hunts. The first one was usually like a Thursday, Friday, and then the next one would be like 10 days later, the following, you know, Saturday, Sunday. And, you know, there were, back in the day, Tim, when I started here, I mean, there were like guys building preference points, I think, for that event. You know, guys did not get drawn every year. It was, you know, extremely popular. And yeah, we got a lot of nice pictures. There's still big bucks running in there. It maybe not as many. Maybe the gene pool took a hit from the heavy pressure it took for years. And or, I don't know, maybe it's just not as many guys willing to march in there. It's probably a fairly tough hunt, right? You gotta hike in there. It's a big, what, 53,000 acre military installation. And it's not easy, probably getting a deer in and out of there. Now it's just, what, 1 3-day hunt. This year will be held October 27th, 28th, and 29th, Friday through Sunday. Again, application deadline, Friday, August 18th.
Right, there are many variables as to why there's not more huge deer coming out of there. But I think that you actually hit it the hardest when you said that the gene pool has been altered, and I think it has. I think when you take those massive bucks out of the gene pool, it's not long before those smaller animals, those ones that don't have the ability to foster those huge racks, they're the ones that are actually spreading the genes, and you are seeing smaller bucks out there running around. Of course, like you said, there are still some monsters in there. There's monsters in that whole region. You just have to get lucky, but I think today there's fewer opportunities for monster bucks, although it's still a great hunt. If you're an archer and you don't mind, like you said, putting a little effort into a really quality hunt, this is one you should apply for.
To my column on the opinion page, we have not talked about that yet this broadcast. We talked about the situation with the SNAs and lead. Spielman and I discussed that, but I wrote about this Upper Sioux Agency State Park situation. I'm not happy with how that has transpired. I'm not even sure I oppose what the DNR and the state did here. You could probably make a solid case to me that the band should be in control of that property, even though it was already public, right? Anybody could use it. So, you know, we can have that discussion. To me, it was more about the lack of transparency on this thing. I don't know if you read the Deb Gao story in the previous week's Outdoor News. She's from the Marshall Independent. We reprinted it, where DNR people were, they had, you know, another public engagement meeting to talk about it. And they said, we're not here to talk about the transfer. We're here to talk about what happens going forward. And later on in the same story, another DNR person said, well, we didn't really know what was going to happen, what the legislature was going to do. And it feels disingenuous to me. It feels like probably the DNR, the Walz administration, the DFL's Capitol, House and Senate, just slammed this thing through. There was almost no public discourse or debate about it. And we're out 1,300 acres of public land, plus a public water access on the Minnesota River. The point of my column is there's not much we can do about that, but we better damn well ensure that the money the legislature gave us to, you know, replace recreational opportunities in that area goes into permanent public lands. I don't want this just going and creating, you know, some giant playground somewhere.
Exactly. And, you know, it sounds to me, and I'm seeing this in other areas too, that it's becoming a common occurrence now that there's just, there are a lot of decisions being made. And in this case, it's actually something that the legislature actually put into law. And there's been no public input. There's been no chance for individuals to get in there that are against this whole scenario and say, hey, there's a reason why we should think about this a little more than just, you know, a knee-jerk response to someone's request, because the tribe's going to come in there and basically shut that whole property off to anybody but the tribe. And, boy, I'll tell you what, that park has been around for a long time. There's a lot of people that have developed some traditions around that park. And like you said, that's a beautiful public access and a great spot on the river. And all of a sudden it's gone, just like that. And people are surprised, they're shocked, and they're going, what happened? And I see this as a pattern that is developing within the DNR, the legislature, and especially the governor's office. And we need to make sure that this kind of stuff doesn't happen, because you can see the consternation that occurs because of it.
You know, we talk a lot about transparency. Lots of politicians like to talk about transparency. And, you know, this decision, as well as the matter involving that commentary on the same page with this scientific and natural area of things with lead, again, I don't necessarily disagree with the decision, but it sure as hell was not transparent. It just happened. It just came down. There was not a lot of public feedback.
I don't necessarily disagree with giving them this property back, as long as we can have something that's twice as much and and twice as good replace it. The problem, I remember when they used to say, oh, we're going to take this wetland and we're going to develop it. It won't be a wetland anymore, but we're going to make another one just like it somewhere else.
Yes, we're going to mitigate it. Yes.
We'll dig a big hole and fill it full of water, and then it sits there as a big mud hole. And that's what I fear is going to happen here. They're going to say, oh, you know, you lost this huge amount of acres, and why don't we just mow something over here and stick a jungle gym there and call it even?
Now, in the DNR's defense, I point blank asked Ann Pierce, the DNR State Parks Director, that question. I said, yeah, you're going to go build a $5 million playground on a county park and call it good? She said, absolutely not. She said, well, there's a lot of things on the table, including some new public land. She said, a wildlife management area is not out of the question, something like that. Tim, I will be very surprised if we get an acre-for-acre deal out of this. And I think that's what we should be demanding. I think that's what groups like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers should be demanding.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers didn't seem to really come out strongly one way or the other on this deal. So
yeah, I call their quote diplomatic.
Well, I'd call it diplomatic, too. They were, I'd call it wishy-washy, too.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisline is with you, along with Tim Spielman, for our final segment of this week's broadcast. Tim, it looks like the state is going to have its governor's pheasant opener down in Owatonna this year, October 13th and 14th. I'm glad that event is indeed going to exist here in a few months.
Yeah, I do. I always liked the governor's pheasant opener. I used to love that, going to that with all the different governors. Dayton was actually one of my favorites. He'd go out there and just post, and they'd always have me hang out with him and post with him. And I never liked having walls on those hunts because, you know, a pheasant would get up and you could see it was going to fly right over Dayton's head, and then walls would pop up and blast the thing before. One day he shot one right at his feet. Honest to goodness, this bird literally, you know, I'm sitting there watching, this bird literally didn't get three wing beats. I'm not even sure Walls got his gun up into a mounted position.
Shooting from the hip.
Before he pulled the trigger and just waxed this thing. This guy can shoot. He's a good shot, and he loves to pheasant hunt. And this Owatonna region is a great region for pheasant hunting, and so I think it's going to be a real successful governor's opener.
Tim, final quick thought here. Beyond Minnesota, funny story out of Maine. Woman punches bear that chased dogs. It said that she was gardening. She stood as the bear was chasing the dog back into her yard after being in the woods. Said she stood up and made herself appear large, which is recommended in a black bear encounter. But instead of slowly retreating, the woman proceeded to confront the bear, which is not recommended.
Exactly. You know, I've had many bear encounters over the years because I used to spend way too much time in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. I had one just walk through my backyard here last week here on Malin Island. We have a lot of bears here. We run into them occasionally, and generally you just, like you said, you put your arms up and you yell, "Hey, bear, get out of here," and they turn and run. It's not a big deal. In this particular case, it was chasing her dog, and she punched it in the nose, and it bit her. And you know what I always say about a situation like that? You're crazy. Your dog is replaceable. You are not. And that bear could have easily decided it was going to chaw on your head, rip off your neck. You know, I mean, it's one of those deals where, yeah, black bears generally don't kill people, but sometimes they do. And you just shouldn't be punching a bear in the nose because it's chasing your dog. That's just plain stupid.
Well, stitched up, I guess all is well that ends well. But please, again, be careful out there. It's that time of year when people and bears tend to bump into each other out of doors. Tim, good to see you. Thanks for spending a segment with me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Yes, we'll catch up to you soon.
All right, well, thank you to the Tims. Thank you to Rob Kim, as well as Charlotte Roy, who joined us this week. Everybody have a great week out of doors. Rob Dreisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.